An established animation studio tries its hand at creature feature with kid-friendly humor in a stab at 1950s American monster movies. But does DreamWorks got the teamworks, like with Shrek, to make the dream work, or will this proposed animated franchise belly flop before it hits the San Francisco Bay? Find out along with us as we take that deep dive that we do. This is Kaiju vs. History, Monsters vs. Aliens.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your brainless blob, Patrick, and joining me is a 49 and some change tall woman, Miles. Hey, Miles.
What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back. Monsters vs. Aliens. This is Kaiju, right?
I mean, you know, it's in there in the title. It's got monsters, cool. Got aliens. This episode might end up being called Miles versus Patrick's. As we
who's the monster here, Miles? Who's closer?
Me,
to
I'm the hero.
The audience. This movie came out in March of 2009 and is, as a time period, I didn't have a niece or nephew nearby to go see a kids' movie with. My girlfriend.
I have never needed a reason. I saw this in theaters. Well,
my girlfriend at the time, my now wife, we often saw Pixar films, animated Pixar films in theater. We've kind of stopped because, well, I feel like a lot of the recent ones have not been up to quality. But there's so many that are, you know, like WALL-E came out kind of in a similar time frame that are very everyone can enjoy kind of movies. We watched from DreamWorks How to Train Your Dragon in theaters, and yeah, this one, I think for both of us when it came out, was just not of interest to either of us. But in the 15 years since it released, now we just passed its 15 year anniversary, it does feel like it's kind of stuck in 2009 there. Did you watch this movie when it came out, Miles?
Oh, absolutely. And
in theaters,
I saw this in theaters. I saw this opening day. I was so excited because, I mean, just the prospect of, you know, this throwback sci-fi thing, getting a treatment from a up and coming animation studio. Like Shrek was huge, and yeah, Kung Shrek Fu Panda massive. Had come out, you know, the year before. But this studio was still trying to find its legs in a lot of other ways. Like, it was making good money, but like the animation style, like that, like you have these odd movies in between their blockbusters, like in between Shrek 2 and Shrek 3, you have stuff like Over the Hedge and Flushed Away, and even between the Shrek the Third and Kung Fu Panda, you have B movie. So you had these movies, and the thing about those movies is like
that Shark Tale that they tried so hard to.
Oh, I remember Shark Tale. I saw Shark Tale in the theaters.
Oh, why?
Because it looked fun. Well,
did you see Over the Hedge?
I did see Over the Hedge. Well, also keep in mind that in the early 2000s, I worked in a movie theater.
Yeah, that's you saw everything.
And yeah, well, so I did see everything, but also like throughout that decade, I had kept my connections, so I didn't pay for a movie until like 2014.
I was a little more, movie theater tickets are so expensive up here. I was a little more selective. I still managed to see some really big stinkers in theaters at the time. I remember.
Oh, I'm sure. But so
I'm kind of happy I didn't see those one in theaters. Did you see it in 3D, Miles?
I did.
3D.
I did see it in 3D. But what I was going to talk about is, like, there is, in some of these in-between movies, there is a concept there, and then there's like the art team that doesn't seem to be putting all of the, like, all the money and effort into, and it's weird because this movie had a budget.
One of the highest budgets of any animated film at the time.
Which is weird because as someone, spoiler alert, who is a massive fan of this movie, the budget doesn't always show in this. This movie had like a $175 million budget, which is insane.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Well, we talk about the production, you'll understand why it was.
Oh, no. I remember hearing about this. But this is also a time where like other movies like this were coming out that had inflated budgets. They had great ideas. and the style just didn't go over with people. There was another one that came out a couple years later called Rise of the Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
That was
bombed.
It bombed so hard. And it's such a fun movie.
This movie did well enough here in the United States, but it did not translate to other countries.
Which, I mean, makes sense because it's such an American film.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's set in America. They mentioned
in the weeds.
They mentioned Japan with
Insectosaurus.
And the end of the film, a slug fell into a
it's going atomic after France.
Waste. And yeah, or like a giant radioactive escargot, I guess, is what they're going for. But
oh, wait, Do I need to even go into what's in a title?
Yeah, well, Monsters vs. Aliens is the main
title.
It did translate to various words in other countries, like creatures versus aliens or monsters fighting aliens instead of the versus, if that didn't translate well. The 3D IMAX experience was called Monsters vs. Aliens, a monstrous IMAX 3D experience.
Yes, it was.
It had a couple of working titles, one of which was Wreaks Havoc, which we'll talk about in a little bit, is the very loose source material that it's kind of based on. It's a 1980s black and white comic book, much akin to like a Conan the Barbarian, those kind of, Rock Sampson kind of adventure stories. I mean, it's
loose enough that it doesn't get a credit.
I mean, it has like almost nothing to do. But then another working title for the movie, which I think is great and probably, I would say, even better than Monsters vs. Alien, was just Creature Feature. Was their working title?
Probably the one thing I will agree with you about in this episode is that, because I think Creature Feature is a better... Monsters vs. Aliens is...
So simple.
It's simple. I get why they're doing it, because the versus thing has been made so popular by kaiju cinema. But because of the specific American style, I think Creature Feature is the way to go.
It's a great title. And I feel like it would, maybe they didn't pick that because it also would have some translation difficulties and not rhyme in other countries. But I really like that one.
I mean, that you're probably 100% correct. But if they were going all in on the Americana of this movie, they should have just stuck with it.
well, speaking of Americana, the movie opens on like a shot of a CGI animated hamburger for like no reason. I don't quite understand why we're staring at a hamburger at first, but then it gets into the guy kind of in the South Pole working for radar defense, hitting a paddle ball at the screen. I was like, oh, this is that time period where every movie tried to be a 3D film and charge $5 more for a gimmick that I hated at the time and I still hate. I was like, oh, that makes sense that this movie would be part of that wave. But it wasn't just this movie. It was like every movie at the time had obviously there's still 3D film experiences.
3D was, I mean, I saw Monster House in 3D. Coraline in 3D.
Deadpool versus Wolverine just came out, and I was looking at tickets, and
there's a 3D for it.
There's a 3D for it, and it's like one of the only theaters that isn't sold out this weekend. Like, if you want to see it, you have to go see it in 3D, and it's like
having just like literally left that movie to record this podcast, you don't need to see it in 3D.
You don't need to see any movie. In 3D, that's the whole point.
As a fan of monster movies and horror movies, there is some fun schlock to be had. Our friend Drew was going through the Friday 13th series, even though he's not a horror movie guy, and he just texted me, "Hey, is Part 3 supposed to be in 3D?" And I said, "Yes,
it's called."
Well, so 3D, yes, right? You are correct. In every other version of the movie, it's called Friday the 13th Part 3D.
Yeah,
but on Max, it's just Halloween part or Friday 13th part 3.
They like had a gimmick like every 10 minutes. They start with a stupid ball and paddle gimmick, and then like they do nothing else.
No, there's a handful of like goo related things, which I mean, I don't really care about 3D, so it doesn't matter to me. I think I saw it in 3D, but I. Mm-hmm. It has never mattered to me.
Yeah. Oh, a lot of movies at the time in 3D. And I kind of wish after every one, I was like, wow, that didn't seem any different. You know,
I'm not going to lie. I haven't seen a single movie in 3D that I think has ever like impressed me that much. Like maybe like I will say the presentation of Ghostbusters 2016 was pretty cool because they actually had the proton beams like leave the actual litter box.
Like, I want, yeah.
And that was cool.
I want 40 like, if I'm going in an extra dimension.
Yeah, like I do want to see Twisters in like 4X or whatever it is. Like that sounds
yeah, it's pretty, fun. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're talking about.
Now we're just having an off the walls conversation that we just
talking about better movies. But
no, we're not. We are not. We got to get back to the classics. Monster versus Aliens.
Yeah. So this movie is about a group of 1950s primarily, although I think it kind of bleeds into other decades as well. Very specifically, American monster movies in like what if they were real and kind of treated like cryptids and gathered up by the government, and then a war general named General
W.R. Munger. Great stuff. This is like Carmen Sandiego level bad guy name, or not bad guy naming, but like character naming, and I love it.
He gathers them up and then just throws them at an alien invasion, and that's the rest of the movie. And
I love that this movie start like opens with a black and white sequence with the DreamWorks logo and the flying saucer coming in to suck up the little boy fishing on the moon. There's so much I love about this movie.
That kid had it coming. He's been living on Easy Street in these credits.
Well, so the movie stars Reese Witherspoon as Susan Murphy, who will become basically our 50-foot woman.
Ginormica is her code name.
Ginormica is her code name.
It's a good name.
But I so first of all, you have a great voice cast here. You have Reese Witherspoon as Susan, Seth Rogen as Bob, who is our blob. Hugh Laurie as Dr. Herbert Cockroach, a mishmash of several mad scientists, but I'm assuming they named him Herbert after Herbert West from
Stories. Yeah, there's that. There's Reanimator. There's a little bit of Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein, and probably closest would be The Fly. Like, because there was a 1950s Fly, right?
Yes, and he is very similar to that style. And I do like the mishmash of everything because not everything's one for one. Like, obviously, you have the 50-foot woman, but, like, you also have the missing link, which is usually typically considered to be an ape. And this thing is a little more Gillman.
Yeah, it's a bit creature from the Black Lagoon as well. It kind of...
That's Gillman.
Yeah. But not all old people will know it's going to kill Man Miles. But yes,
well, you should
kind of monster, and they make reference to the Invisible Man as well, who died
of a heart attack. He's still in his spot.
this is technically built off the filming rights for a horror comic called Rex Havoc and his team called the Ass Kickers of the Fantastic. Which is kind of like a rip on what's the monster fighting DC comic book with like Frankenstein in DC comics.
Oh,
Creature Commandos. Commandos, yeah. That it has a similar feel, but it is very much in the drawing style of a Conan the Barbarian. And a lot of these characters did exist. I couldn't read all of the comic, but did have some different names. The 50,000 pound woman was Ginormica in the comic, and Blob was called Ick, which I think is probably more fun. Just ICK exclamation point. Jim Strensom is the original author of this comic, and you might find this interesting. He went on to direct animation for Hanna-Barbera cartoons. Ooh. And did like a dozen different Scooby-Doo projects over a couple of decades. And
did he do Zombie Island?
He did four of the direct-to-DVD films in the late 90s, early 2000s. You can kind of see his style kind of, he's gone to do like more kid-friendly stuff in his later years. But production designer David James talked about how this movie was both trying to satirize these monster films, but also give them a little bit of a sandbox to play around with for the movie.
And that's something you can, to me, you can really feel like, I mean, the movie starts off with your main character is Susan Ginormica, who is supposed to be getting married to what she thinks is the man of her dreams, Derek, played by Paul Rudd, who we later found out is a complete jerk. She is exposed to a meteor that's fallen from the sky that's got quantonium, which is apparently this
unobtainium.
it is a substance that's essentially magic, and causes her to grow to the size of 49 feet and 11 inches.
So and she's not the 50-foot woman, Miles.
She's supposed to.
I did not like Reese Witherspoon in this film.
I thought she was delightful.
She's so not good. She gets hit with the meteor, and her reading of the line is just oof. Like that's what it sounds like in the movie when she gets smacked.
It's supposed to. You're bringing big Derek energy out right now.
It's so funny because I do like the character, but I just don't think she did anything super special. Will Arnett is the missing link. He's become like one of the foremost voice actors coming
from acting. He has done so much. I mean, sometimes he does a little bit more one note because like you hear his voice, you're like, oh, I know. But I mean, at the same time, I'm going to say
Seth Rogen, it was hired to play himself in this movie, and
which is fine because he's supposed to be the blob and he does an excellent job. Honestly, for me, Hugh Laurie like takes everything. I thought he was hilarious.
The only voice acting in this movie that really transported me was W.R. Monger is played by Kiefer Sutherland, and he's doing this wild over the top.
Kiefer Sutherland was having the time of his life.
You get like kind of Dr. Strangelove, Army General. We call the big one Insectosaurus. I never imagined that was it.
I love Insectosaurus. So I probably in one of my closets now because I don't have space for them. At the time, they made a bunch of these stuffed monsters and put them in crane games in mall arcades and stuff like that.
Marketing push was pretty intense for this film.
I, at the time, like whatever reason, like in the mid to late 2000s, I had this thing where like I was like a whiz kid at crane games. Oh, but I like
that's pretty fun.
No, I won every single monster from Monster vs. Aliens from a crane game. They're probably in my closet. I have a plush for all of them except Ginormica. I don't think they made one for her, or they didn't put that one in there. But I have Dr. Cockroach. I have Bob. I have the one I wanted to get. The reason I got all of those is because I wanted to get Insectosaurus because I love Insectosaurus so much.
Yeah, and Insectosaurus is our actual kind of kaiju stand-in for Mothra, basically, in the series, and for the most of the movie, it is more so Marvel Mothra. But I actually enjoyed that design, and I really liked Ginormica kind of in general. They kept it's very weird in like the plot of the movie, but multiple times she's like knocked unconscious and wakes up in new clothing. And I'm like, what? They keep undressing
Who's taking her clothes off?
Are they trying to make toys out of her? But I enjoyed, she is.
Just and they didn't make a ton of toys because I was on the hunt when this movie came out. I was a massive fan of this movie.
Production for this film was insane. You mentioned the high budget, $175 million. It took teams of artists working for multiple years, over 500 artists, not including voice talent, several years, 4 years from 2005 to 2009 to create this. And if they had used a single computer to render the film, it would have supposedly taken like 4,000 years. They used massive server farms of HP kind of workstations that were linked up with their processing cores to animate, you know, a minute over the course of like a month, and several terabytes of film data for like every couple of seconds in the movie. It was pretty intense. And, you know, a lot of that is because they were kind of pushing the boundaries of what they could do with CGI at the time in 2009. So like Blob, for example, or Bob was see-through. And that was, you know, a pretty intense effect where you had like stuff entering into him. You can see behind him when he's moving around and things. So
when he hugs people
none of the Toy Story toys are like even like half as complicated as this amorphous blob. And they did some very difficult technical stuff, which makes it hilarious that there's so many other errors and like weird things that are out of place and wrong with this movie, which I think really could have, most of them, been solved on the storyboard aspect, which, you know, I think Pixar is pretty far ahead of the game as far as
100%
making sure everything has like an internal logic to it. And this movie just kind of threw it out the window in a few places. But I will say, from the design point, the monsters are both the star of the movie and I think the star of the design team. Miles, why do the humans look so disgusting? Why does every human in this movie look like
I think it's a choice. I think they look fine. Yeah. Like the president, like they have a they almost have like kind of a Mad Magazine look, and I think that's on purpose.
It's so funny. I thought of Alfred E. Newman like the first time I saw someone. But they just mess around. There is a lot of cringe humor for me in this movie because there's like gross out humor, you know, your farts and burps and whatnot. But also like
those are classics. You gotta have a fart and burp.
Her future mother-in-law had like a gimpy thumb that they made like it's several jokes generation. About. Yeah, I was like,
so good.
Why?
It's so funny. I mean, that's the Shrek humor, you know?
I was about to say, that feels like they're just like, oh, well, we're the studio that made Shrek. We got to include some of that. And it's like, it worked in that movie because it was about your looks. The movie was about how you look, you know, on the outside.
Well, I mean, for her, it's also that, because like as she becomes a giant lady, like, also, I don't care what anyone says, when someone's like, here comes the bride, as they're running away in terror, it made me laugh so hard.
Why didn't her name should have been Bridezilla? Like, it was right there for the taking.
I mean, but
ginormica.
Because her identity isn't just being a bride, Patrick. We are.
Is her identity just being ginormous?
Yes. Hence ginormica.
Yeah. So,
but there are so many lines in this movie that I just actively love. I had to jot some down, like when Glaxnar, who is the alien, who is after the
played by Rainn Wilson, and I really didn't clock that.
I didn't either. I don't know why I thought it was Dave Foley. I have no idea why for like a decade I thought Dave Foley was the alien in this movie.
I think he was doing a good job. I think he was changing up his voice.
Yeah, no, he did a good job. But when Glaxnar is like, you must be terrified, waking up in a strange place, wearing strange clothes, imprisoned by a strange being on a strange hovering device. Strange, isn't it? And she's just like, Harley, it's not my first time. Wow, you really get around. Like,
that's so inappropriate.
But that's what I love about some of these movies, is like they have jokes that are like for kids and they have jokes for like adults. Like, kids aren't gonna get that and they'll just like laugh at it, but as an adult, like, I was like, that's really funny to me. And there's so many things like that. There are so many throwbacks to like people who have seen these monster movies. I love the gender reversal of the typical makeout teens played by John Krasinski and Renee Zellweger for some reason.
Yeah, why Renee Zellweger was in this movie for 30 seconds, I do not know. But
also, like, that whole sequence is so funny because it's the reverse of all of those things.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that's like, you know, it's very simple jokes and humor that adults would understand and kids would laugh at it for a different reason.
Yeah, exactly. The problem
none
was
of the humor really worked on me in this movie.
Oh man, I've seen this movie so many times. I have introduced people to this movie, and so far they've all liked it.
The worst thing about it is I love Stephen Colbert, and I can't remember.
I do not want to hear you besmirch his amazing communication sequence.
I don't remember a scene with President Hathaway in this movie that was not hard to watch.
Oh no. When he's doing the Axel Foley theme, I die every single time. I think it's so funny.
It feels so out of place, because it's like they're trying to make these like, you know, very serious monsters, and then like the humans in the movie are just like gross caricatures of what
I mean,
like,
but the monsters aren't serious either. They're worried about first impressions and falling in love with Jell-O molds and overcompensating for their old bodies. Like they're not super serious either. Like, this movie is supposed to be a gas, and for me, it is.
I think it is a great monsters movie. It is not a great kaiju movie. And I think maybe it's because I was like expecting more kaiju action. There is like a long action sequence in San Francisco that gives you all the kaiju action you really want in the film. But I was
Centosaurus versus the giant robot.
Yeah. And then, you know, kind of Ginormica running away and using cars as skates and stuff. I just expected there would be more of that kind of large scale fighting from the poster, maybe from the trailer, even, because we're doing these different things. And I was like, all right, well, maybe Blob is going to get like really big at one point and be able to fight on the same level as this robot, which seems like also just a ripoff of the monster from the robot from The Incredibles.
It's an old school robot design. Even that monster from The Incredibles is an old school monster design.
They're aping the same thing you're saying. So yeah.
Yes.
From the 60s.
I think for me, like, one of the things about this movie to me that's so much fun is it's loving and not so loving, like Raz of old science fiction movies from the 50s. Because a lot of them are covered in the stuff that we did, because let's face it, most of the American movies we cover from the 50s are not kaiju movies. And yeah, I mean,
just really a 50-foot woman and Mothra, right?
Mothra's not American.
Well, I'm saying as far as like the creatures that are in this.
Oh, no, but what I was saying is like most of those movies that we covered, even still, like they were more atomic anomalies. So this is harking back to that whole era. So like as someone who's like sat through even the dregs of that stuff because of our show, and I'm not even talking about the good stuff. No, I'm not even being funny. I'm like, a lot of the good American sci-fi that this movie's referencing, we didn't watch the show because it doesn't pertain to us.
Yeah.
But those deep cuts are there. There is an absolute love for that stuff. But I think they were also trying to have their cake and eat it too, which doesn't always translate well for so many people. Mm-hmm. Like, there is stuff for kids, but it wasn't going to make kids go out and buy toys. And there is stuff for adults, but they weren't going to tell their friends, oh, hey, I saw this animated movie, because we were still in that age of American cinema. Like, Shrek's one thing, but
if the movie is good, the movie is good. And
yeah, but we still were on that slow crawl. Like, Shrek and Pixar could do it, but like DreamWorks was still not that studio. Like, Even by Shrek standards, people knew Shrek. They didn't care or know about DreamWorks. It's only like really in the last decade where, like, because they did Secret Life of Pets and stuff, right?
I believe so. But yeah.
They've got an Illumination. They kind of led into that whole thing. So like they've figured it out for sure. But I mean, Kung Fu Panda 4 just came out, or 5, or whatever number it is. They figured it out, but I think at this time, other studios' animation stuff, no matter how much they spent on it, we're still trying to figure out how to make a good movie. And it may appeal to niche audiences. Like, this movie was specifically made for me. Like, I think this movie is hilarious. I still crack up at it. Like, you were texting me like all your problems with it as I was watching it. And I'm like, oh, I hated this. And I was like, oh, I just laughed my butt off at this. Like, I don't know what to tell you. But for the kaiju stuff, yeah, I mean, Incestosaurus is supposed to be Godzilla in terms of like, this is the pastiche that we're using. Yes, it's a lot more Mothra. That's the only kaiju connection. Like, even Attack of the 50-foot Woman is not, we've talked about, it's kaiju adjacent.
I was just hoping for a little bit more of that. And I would say this movie is not close to kaiju movie. It's closer to another DreamWorks film that released the year after, in doing something similar to and around a genre, Megamind, which is another movie I had never seen.
I still haven't seen that one either. I think Peacock just released some sort of series based on it.
It's the same plot. It's like, what if the bad guys, aka the monsters or the, you know, villain of a comic book series was actually, you know, doing heroic things? And
isn't Megamind supposed to be about like the villain kills the hero and has nothing to do?
I don't know if I've never seen it, so I couldn't tell you, but
I haven't either, but I thought that was the plot.
I think the hero is actually kind of a jerk and Megamind, you know, just starts turning into a hero. But unlike Monsters vs. Aliens, Megamind just got a sequel and like a series going to Paramount Plus this year.
So
14 years after the movie came out, it got this sequel, which is so weird.
Because time has been very kind to Megamind, which I'm hoping will happen to Monster vs. Aliens, because Monster vs. Aliens had several of the, they did kind of a Pixar thing where they would do like a Halloween special with Bob and stuff.
Yeah.
But they said, DreamWorks like came out and said, like, you know, films like Shark Tale, Monster vs. Aliens, Megamind, they all had this idea of like parodying movies, and that didn't travel well internationally. So
yeah,
we're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Which and it sucks. It's like,
well, I think you can do this and not have it be so niche that it doesn't play to international markets. Like, honestly, it's kind of surprising that something like Shark Tale wouldn't.
I mean, I guess my thing about this one is the script itself is so American specific. So if you were worried about international markets, don't spend $200 million on a movie that's so American specific.
Yeah, there's no reason why they couldn't travel to other places around the world, you know, San Francisco being that the centerpiece of the action doesn't make a ton of sense as far as like kind of the movies that they're going for, just kind of like where they ended up. They were in California at the beginning of the movie, and then they continued to be in California.
Yeah. I also love the Dr. Strangelove scenes in the war room where like the latte button and the nuclear option are the same big red button.
Such dumb humor. Yeah, so this got two TV specials.
Humor, Derek.
Two TV specials and like kind of a short, or two shorts and a TV special, followed the same year, 2009, later in the fall. And Miles, I previewed both of them. You don't need to watch them.
I've seen them all.
I think one of them doesn't even have Ginormica in it.
No, it doesn't.
They just like kick her out. And it's like, all right, well, I'm not interested in this at all now. But
no, Night of Living Carrots, I think, is just the monster. I think it even takes place before she arrives.
Does it? That's so weird. And then 4 years after the movie came out, almost to the day in 2013, they made a Nickelodeon animated series with none of the original actors or actresses in the film, but a whole cast of actually very talented voice actors. But the show was, you know, it's dead in the water. Like 4 years after this movie,
4 years after, and then like fizzled. They also like had decided, oh, we want to do more like Nickish things, and I'm like, I mean, I guess, but like, don't make a show based off of a movie from like 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, a great voice acting cast for that series.
Mm-hmm.
Diedrich Bader was Missing Link, and Ricky Lindholm is Ginormica, which I think is a great cast. Like, I wish they
Jillian Jacobs is in this one.
Actual like all comedians for these voice roles to begin with, because
also Chris O'Dowd as Dr. Cockroach is inspired casting.
It's interesting. It's interesting. Yeah, this movie's, it's kind of hit or miss with audiences and with reviews throughout
and the years. And podcast hosts.
Yeah, well, I think I'm right there with a lot of people. But it has a 59% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, which is less than its critic score, I think. And, you know, that's pretty low for DreamWorks at the time. I feel like some of the sequels kind of got down into those numbers, but the next year they made How to Train Your Dragon, which is like old 90s, you know. Kung Fu Panda didn't get great scores, but it made buku box office and was an international hit. Like the fourth movie just came out this year.
I don't think B-Movie did super great.
Oh no, but B-Movie's another one where the humans look gross. And for no reason.
And for whatever reason, that movie has like had this weird cult following.
Yeah, it's not good at all. But yeah, there's parts of the movie that worked for me, parts that didn't. There's just bits of the design of Galaxar's ship, which I hated, so uninspired. The hacking into the computer, the brain of the ship. They have to do like Dance Dance Revolution.
It was so great.
That was like popular at the time, I guess. I don't know. I was like, why is this here? Like,
it's so funny though.
Why does Dr. Herbert or Dr. Cockroach know Dance Dance Revolution? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, because he says he like has studied, I think, Simon Says or Simon, the game.
So yeah, there's also a sequence where, a very cool sequence where Ginormica is chasing after Galaxar, Rainn Wilson's character, and she's 50 foot tall, and she's like just ripping through metal doors like they're paper, you know, And then Galaxor traps her and shrinks her back down. And like the rest of the movie, she's pretty much small size, which is, but she races back through those same doors, like to chase after Galaxor, and is like the same size as the hole she made. It's just like this huge continuity error where it's like those doors were like 100 feet tall and she's like still 50 feet.
9 feet, 11 inches.
Coming back through them. So I was like, did the door shrink? What's wrong with this? And anyway, I think the beginning, middle of this movie worked very well for what they're trying to set up. The third act just completely lost me in this one.
Oh, and, man. I disagree. I think this movie is like through and through just so funny. Like, and the thing about comedy is like, I can't say, oh, it's funny because of this, and this. Like, I can regurgitate lines, but
I think this movie was hilarious for 2009. You know, I think when it came out, this was like all kind of fresh comedy, you know, and it just like so much of it doesn't translate today.
But isn't that an entirely different conversation? Because like, you know, we can both watch a classic comedy from the 70s that is like regarded as a classic, and it might have some things that work really well for us now, but like, unless we weren't alive then, does it matter? Because like, I mean, I've watched a lot of comedies from different eras, and there are movies that I have seen regarded as classics and I'm like, I don't get it. Like, I mean, I think that's a fair statement, because like, and that's not disparaging anyone's talent, but like, if you are, I mean, there are some things that are like immortal. Like if you watch them, like Groucho Marx, like that's always kind of funny. You watch Adam Costello, like that stuff still is great, but stuff from the 70s and 80s and even the 60s doesn't always translate. And some of those things are, you had to be there. So I can't fault this movie for that aspect of it. Because I was there and I thought it was hilarious at the time.
Yeah, I can understand that. It's hard for me watching this because, I mean, there weren't too many other, you know, better animated movies that have.
I should have reached out to you like, hey, Patrick, this is Miles from Novel Writing Class. Come see this movie with me. And then you would be with me.
Yeah,
you'd be on the MVA train.
Well, like I said, I did see a lot of animated movies from Pixar at the time. And it's like, you know. It's hard to compare them, even though, as you mentioned in our private conversations before we started recording, someone compared Up to Monsters versus Alien.
Monsters versus Alien
won the Saturn Award.
They did. The very intelligent, very wise committee that governs the Saturn Awards, which is kind of the Oscars for like the sci-fi horror community.
It's great
until Fangoria's Chainsaw Awards came along, but like, yeah, I'm they're pretty well regarded. But this movie beat not just Up, it beat what's that garbage Wes Anderson crap?
Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah, that one.
Well, the one that boggled me was Coraline.
I'm not gonna kid you. I'm also shocked that Coraline.
I am just absolutely shocked. Well, you know, it's so funny because they're both in their 15 year anniversary, and Coraline is getting re-released in theaters this year because people love that movie, and no one is talking about Monsters.
Sometimes it takes a while for people to understand how wrong they were.
Roger Ebert gave this film 2.5 stars, which honestly is, if you read his review, it's very high. He says, I suppose kids will like this movie, especially those below the age of reason. Their parents may not be amused.
Roger, I love you so much, but in your latter years, you lost it.
Rest in peace, Roger.
I love you, bro. I have like 2 Ebert books.
Are you interested in rating this film, Miles? I'm very interested to hear what you have to say about your personal enjoyment. What do you think?
So, Monsters vs. Aliens is legit like one of my favorite animated movies. Not in my top 10 per se, because I have a lot of favorite anime movies, but this is one that I have loved for a very long time. I introduced it to people when I first like start hanging out with them or whatever. I think I introduced it to my fiance when we first started dating. And it's not a litmus test or anything like that, but it's just like, oh, I love this movie. I want to see what you think about it. But this is one of those movies that I love sharing with people. I loved it when it came out. I thought it was hilarious. I still think it's hilarious. Like, all the jokes, no matter how stupid or silly they are, the whole Bob having the fake relationship with Derek is so funny to me. I think it's so well done. And then the whole thing with the Jello mold, also great. Jeffrey Tambor giving an understated performance before his weird situation. I really appreciate that. Everything about this movie is a lot of fun. I do agree with you in the respect that I kind of wish there was more monsters versus stuff. Mm. We get built up for one fight and then a follow-up fight because Gino America gets kidnapped. I do wish there was more of that within this movie. I assume they were kind of hoping that this would do well so they could stop worrying about the pathos and just we're going to focus on monster adventures. Kind of like Hotel Transylvania, how it was able to just focus on random stuff after the first movie did so well. That said, this movie just soars for me. I think it just phenomenally satirizes 50s American science fiction and horror. I love the kaiju design for Insectosaurus. This is an 18 out of 10 for me.
Ugh. I'm gonna mark you down for a 9 so you can save face.
Personal enjoyment, you can't dictate that. My personal enjoyment is so high for this movie. I absolutely love it.
I'm right there with you. 10 out of 10 personal enjoyment for about 20 minutes of this film. And then
get out of here, Derek.
The rest of it is solid 4.
Which also Paul Rudd being the slimy
yeah, his voice is so
great.
Fun to hear, he's a little miscast, but I like his
him. Well, because you're used to liking him.
Yeah. I feel like the final set piece of this film should have been the San Francisco bit, because it was honestly the only thing that really took my attention. The rest of it kind of made me want the slapstick kind of ending on board the ship was a letdown after that. I fell asleep during this film and I was pretty disappointed because I was maybe not hyped up by you, but I was excited to finally watch this movie.
I mean, I did hype this up hardcore to you.
Well, I put it on our list because I think it has a place, but yeah, it's disappointing for me. So a 4 out of 10 for
what?
Well, 4 out of 10 is disappointing on our scale, and I don't feel the need.
I'm 4 out of 10 at you right now.
Watch this again. Technically, I think the animation for the time is pretty top notch. Character design, like I said, really hurt. It was cutting edge at the time, and this is a long time after Shrek, but I feel like some of the animation in Shrek still holds up better than this, from design elements. It's so weird to have this monster movie where I'm more scared to look at the humans in the film than because it's just Uncanny Valley stuff. Honestly, the monster designs are cute and very colorful. They work in this universe. But I'm giving it a 7 out of 10 for the technical. Not much to say about the directing for the film. It has had two directors, one who did mostly writing, but Conrad Vernon would go on to do the Addams Family animated films and Sausage Party, which is love it or hate it, it's a film that exists.
Hated that movie.
I started watching the series. I'm like, what am I doing with my life?
No, I'm
TV series.
I was so hyped for that movie, and that movie was awful. And then the other director has done stuff like Goosebumps 2015, which I really enjoyed.
A lot of writing for him. Don't have his name.
Yeah, the last movie he directed was Detective Pikachu, which did very well. So I don't know why he's not getting more directing jobs.
Rob Letterman, he did not direct. He wrote.
He directed.
Okay, for Detective Pikachu?
Yes, he directed Detective Pikachu. I'm looking at it right now.
He also did the screenplay for that, and that was great. I
agree.
I did see that in theaters. So it's so funny. We haven't gotten a lot of movement from a sequel for that film. I figured they would do that immediately.
My favorite is that he does have a credit for the lighting supervisor for Lake Placid, which is not a movie that we did for this podcast, but you should watch that.
I enjoyed the Goosebumps movie as well. He directed that.
Yeah, it's super fun. Yeah.
Yeah. He also did Shark Tale.
For me, I love this script. I love the designs. I do agree with you. I wish there was more monster versus aliens aspect to this movie. That is where I dock it a little bit in terms of like, I wish the script had added a couple more fights. And yeah. I wish that as much as I do enjoy all the performances, I don't disagree with you that the art style could have used some work. I don't hate the humans, but they were trying to do, they couldn't decide if they wanted to do a stylized version or a semi-realistic version, because they did both. And I think that's what makes this whole thing seem so weird, because like Stephen Colbert's president seems like a stylized, like Alfred Newman style president. But then
yeah, a lot Susan more detail.
Is supposed to be kind of a quirky, cute kind of comic booky style, but like not different from a person. And I don't disagree that they didn't quite nail it with some of the, not the design work, but the animation work. That said, it doesn't distract me one bit. I love all the performances. I love the script. So this is still getting a 9 out of 10 technical for me.
Oh boy. For its important smiles, what do you think about where this kind of ranks as far as Kaiju Eiga is concerned? It's an evocative nature as a kaiju movie.
I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find. I mean, I know we recently had Godzilla Minus One, but I don't think there's a more important film in the modern era for I think that in terms of the kaiju aspect, you have Insectosaurus, and this movie is a pastiche. And so it does exactly that. Like, Godzilla is part of the pastiche of 50s science fiction. It's not the focus, so that will turn people off. But in terms of like how they design the kaiju and what the kaiju does, I think is pretty great. I also think for just a fun time, like if you're going through some kaiju stuff and you just want to like turn your brain off for a little bit, enjoy a good comedy, this is perfect for you. I think this is something that everyone who enjoys this kind of film should watch. So for my evocative nature, I'm giving it a 9 out of 10.
Are you joking? It's way too high, Miles. It's way too high.
No.
I can't drop my score any lower. I think it's just right there in the middle, because you do get, like you said, some good representation for giant kaiju and Insectosaurus, the 50-foot woman. I just really wish they had taken it a little bit further. And
Susan is the best 50-foot woman we've had so far.
I mean, that's not a hard bar to leap over. I was wondering
how you would respond to that comment.
But this doesn't feel like a kaiju movie. It feels like a love letter and a little kids movie for 50s and 60s American sci-fi. And I think that's one of the reasons it kind of failed internationally, is they had a chance to do like a great big, you know, world trotting thing that would have pulled in, I think, maybe some more interest. But yeah, just turned into, you know, the enemy being a very generic alien invasion. And
which, I mean, it should be.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about the alien invasions of the 50s, which is that's what this movie is trying to do, that's fine for me. Whether or not that works in 2009, that's up to you. As a sci-fi dork, that I find that fun.
That will take. So I'm giving it a 5 out of 10 for its importance.
Insane.
Well, once again, we'll go to our scale of what a 9 out of 10 it means, enriching and transformative on our scale.
Sounds about right to me
for this. And mine was moderately insightful, and I believe that's kind of where we are. If you go down to a 4 out of 10, it's soulless, and I don't feel this movie's soulless. I just don't think it's good. that brings your score unbelievably to a 9 out of 10. And mine to a 5 out of 10, and our podcast final to a 7 out of 10. Ugh, which is,
that's
way offensive. Too high.
That's offensive. It's way too high. I apologize to all of our listeners for how horrible Derek has treated you this evening.
To be honest, it is very, the critic score is 73% on Rotten Tomatoes. So we're kind of like in the middle around there, and a 6.4 out of 10 on IMDb. And a 2.8 out of 5 stars on Letterboxd. So we're kind of right in the middle.
All we'll be fools.
Falling on 3.5 stars on Letterboxd. So we're pushing that number up, Miles, at least. What?
I don't know. I this might be the end of the podcast.
It's so funny because in the last few years, we've had
this is my hill to die on.
Many amazing kaiju animated films that we're going to get to eventually in you know, the Sea Monster, and this year the Ultraman Rising movie came out, and even Rumble. I liked Rumble more than this.
I still haven't seen Rumble. Is the Sea Monster the Netflix one?
Yes, the Sea Beast.
I still haven't clocked that one either.
Yeah, there's so many good ones, and I know we're not comparing this one to them.
But yeah, they've got big shoes to fill.
I swear, if you give any of them a lower score than this one, I'm gonna freak out. They're pretty good. I think you'll be excited to get to them.
I honestly have wanted to see them. I just haven't had the time to. So I'm excited to get to them when
Ultraman Rising is just like one of the most beautiful animated movies.
Netflix Ultraman series. So.
Yeah, very different, very different. Miles,
I've clocked that from the trailer.
Miles, where can folks find us if they want to agree with one or zero of us about our rating?
So if you want to send praise to me for being brave enough to stand up to the Derricks of the world, you can email us.
The vast majority of people.
No. The horrible people who don't understand what's beautiful right in front of them. Email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can tweet to us at kaijuversushistory. Visit our website, kaijuversushistory.com. Rate and review our show. Comment, share with your friends, and let us know what you think. Please join the Cosmic Crit Discord. Go to cosmiccrit.com. Click the link. There is a Kaiju vs. History channel that Patrick and I are in every single day. You can chat with us live and check our letterbacks. Check out our Letterbox account to see all of our reviews and watch our list of films.
Gosh,
Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Going through the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. The audience reviews are so wild for this movie. We should have read
Monsters.
We should just spit an hour reading
Monsters
these.
Is what they are.
It's just people didn't get it. People didn't get it, Miles. Miles, thanks for hanging out. Listeners, thank you for listening.
No thanks to you.
We're going to catch you next time when we end. We near the end of the 2000s with a little more Drek, and probably a movie we can both agree on is worse than this one, as a CGI giant shark terrorizes us from a B-tier film and from the F-quality friends over at the Asylum. That's right. Tune in next time for History versus Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus. Bum, 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 bum.